Imagine for a second that you're just, walking down the street and you are wearing this nearly invisible device in your ear, right? And it is silently tracking every single beat of your heart. But at that exact same moment, halfway across the world, a hacker is literally waiting on a digital committee to vote on whether they can stop him from stealing $111 million.
Which is just a staggering amount of money.
Right. And meanwhile, somewhere else entirely, you've got a game developer staring at their monitor. They're on their 90th hour of work this week, meticulously programming the wind physics of a digital hurricane. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Got to be here.
Today, we have this massive, completely exclusive tech news drop from Tekken Game Media. It's dated Wednesday, September 9, 2026, and we are unpacking all of it for you today.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is the connective tissue between all these, seemingly separate events. If you look closely, the theme for today's deep dive really is the hidden mechanics of the tech industry.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Because whether we are talking about microscopic health sensors hidden in earbuds, or these multi-platform corporate strategies, or even the very real human cost of game development, or the invisible war between malicious and ethical hackers, we are really examining the unseen forces that dictate the digital world you interact with every single day.
Unseen forces. I love that framework. And honestly, there is probably no better place to start than with a piece of hardware that's literally designed to disappear the moment you put it on. Let's talk about Apple's highly secretive hardware labs.
Oh, yes. The new AirPods.
Exactly. So they are launching the AirPods Pro 3 next week. The price tag is going to be $199. But the headline here, it has absolutely nothing to do with audio quality.
Right, which is wild for headphones.
Yeah. They have embedded an optical heart rate tracking sensor directly into the stem of each earbud.
And this represents just a massive technical leap for them. They are utilizing a technology called a PPG sensor, so photoplethysmography.
Okay, hold on. Photoplethysmography. That sounds like a medical textbook term. How exactly is a pair of headphones reading my pulse?
Well, it sounds incredibly complex, I know, but the underlying mechanic is actually quite elegant. The sensor essentially shines a microscopic green LED light directly against the skin of your ear canal.
Okay.
And then it measures the minute changes in blood flow based on how that green light reflects back. Because with every single heartbeat, a tiny bit more blood rushes through the blood vessels in your ear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And because blood naturally absorbs green light, the earbud can look at the fluctuation in that light absorption and very accurately count your pulse.
But wait, if it's relying on bouncing light off blood vessels, I mean, doesn't your ear move constantly? Like if you're out for a jog or chewing gum or, even just talking to someone, isn't that sensor bouncing all over the place? How does it not just generate a massive spreadsheet of garbage data?
That is exactly the hurdle. I mean, think about the Apple Watch. Your wrist is relatively stable and flat, right?
Right.
Which makes optical tracking much easier. The ear, like you said, is an anatomical nightmare for this kind of sensor. So to solve this, Apple had to build advanced machine learning algorithms that are specifically designed to understand the physical mechanics of the human ear.
Wait, really? Just for the ear?
Yeah, the software actively filters out the mechanical vibration of your footsteps and the motion of your jaw and separates that from the actual physiological heart rate signal. It is a total triumph of software over hardware limitations.
Which is a stark contrast to what the competition is doing right now.
Exactly. Look at Samsung. They just released their Galaxy Buds 3 Pro for $249, and they opted for a physical contact sensor.
Right.
And it is notably less accurate than Apple's optical PPG approach because it relies on having absolutely perfect skin contact at all times.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Apple isn't stopping with heart rates, by the way. Internal sources say they are already working on environmental temperature sensors for the fourth generation of AirPods. Though right now, they're currently trying to figure out how to account for ambient weather changes, like when you walk in and out of buildings.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because on the surface, from a pure business perspective, this feels a bit like Apple shooting themselves in the foot.
How so?
Well, at $199, aren't they just directly cannibalizing their own Apple Watch SE? That thing sells for $249. If I can get highly accurate heart rate data from my music headphones, why would I buy the watch? It feels like the AirPods are being used as this Trojan horse for fitness, just, you know, sneaking health tracking to users who just want to listen to a podcast.
It's a brilliant observation, but you really have to look at the macroeconomic scale of what they are targeting here. The global health wearables market is projected to hit $180 billion by 2030.
Wow, 180 billion.
Yeah, Apple doesn't just want to sell a slice of that hardware. They want to be the foundational infrastructure of it. So yes, they might lose a few Apple Watch SE sales in the short term, but they are pulling millions more people into their closed health ecosystem.
Ah, right. The ecosystem trap.
Exactly. When you combine the heart rate data from the AirPods with the movement data from the iPhone, and eventually whatever spatial data comes from the Vision Pro, Apple is creating a holistic, multi-device health profile that competitors simply cannot match. I mean, Google Fitbit is allegedly launching a similar earbud, but not until early 2027.
So Apple is planting their flag today.
Exactly.
Speaking of planting flags in new hardware territory, Apple isn't just trying to track our biological data, they're drastically changing the hardware that processes it.
Ah, yes, the elusive foldable iPhone.
Yes. After literally years of rumors, a massive leak just hit Platform X revealing the iPhone Ultra. And right out of the gate, here is the first major surprise. It is a flip form factor.
Right, like an old school clamshell phone that opens vertically.
Exactly, not a book style fold like a mini iPad. And the leaked specs are wild. We're talking a 6.9-inch LTPO OLED main display.
And we should probably clarify what that LTPO designation means for the user. It allows the screen to have a dynamic variable refresh rate.
Right.
So it can drop from a buttery smooth 120 hertz when you're scrolling all the way down to just 1 hertz when you were reading static text.
Which they desperately need to save power because this screen pumps out a blinding 2800 nits of
Yeah,
brightness.
that's incredibly bright.
And there is also a 2.1-inch external display for notifications on the front cover. The chassis is wrapped in grade 5 titanium, coming in titanium gray and deep purple.
Nice.
It is powered by the new A18 Pro chip and features a 48-megapixel main camera alongside a 12-megapixel ultra-wide. But the price, we're looking at a projected $1,499 to $1,599 for Q4 2027.
Right, and the true engineering marvel here, and honestly why it commands that insane price, is what Apple's internally calling the zero-crease hinge.
The holy grail of foldables.
Exactly. Anyone who has used an early foldable phone knows the primary pain point, which is that distinct tactile valley right down the middle of the screen. Apple claims to have completely eliminated it.
Wow.
Yeah, they are utilizing a multi-layer hinge system combined with a newly developed flexible protective layer that is purportedly harder than ceramic shield.
That's crazy.
I know. The mechanics allow the display to lay completely, perfectly flat when open. It's just this obsessive level of hardware refinement.
But here is where it gets really interesting and, frankly, a little concerning. The leaked schematics show this phone has two separate batteries, so one housed in each half of the clamshell. Together, they total only 3,800 milliamp hours. The current iPhone 15 Pro Max has a battery over 4,400 milliamp hours. So I have to ask, if I'm paying $1,600, why am I getting a smaller battery? Aren't we trading basic usability for like an origami gimmick?
Well, because that multi-layer hinge system requires a massive amount of physical space. You just can't cheat physics.
Fair point.
If you want a revolutionary form factor, the hinge that doesn't crease the glass, you have to sacrifice internal volume, which inevitably means a physically smaller battery. But honestly, the battery is only half the battle.
What's the other half?
The real hurdle, and likely why this is slated for late 2027, is the software. Current iOS is simply not built for a foldable paradigm. Apple has to fundamentally rewrite elements of the operating system or maybe even port over iPadOS to handle true multitasking
Right.
and what they call app continuity. That is the ability to seamlessly transition an app from that small 2.1-inch outer screen to the large 6.9-inch inner screen the second you flip it open without a stutter.
And by the time we figure that out in late 2027, Samsung will be releasing a Z Flip 8. I mean, they are so far ahead in this specific race.
They are. But this highlights the power of what we just discussed with the AirPods, ecosystem loyalty.
Yeah.
Apple knows their core user base isn't going to jump ship to Android just to get a folding screen a year too early.
Yeah, that's true.
They will wait for the Apple version, precisely because their entire digital life is locked into iMessage, Apple Health, and iCloud. And, you know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, hardware ecosystem loyalty is an incredibly powerful moat for Apple.
Absolutely.
But in the gaming sector, Microsoft is realizing that relying on that same hardware loyalty might actually be a losing battle.
Right, which brings us to an incredible pivot in strategy. Let's talk about Forza Horizon 6. The internet was buzzing with rumors that the PlayStation 5 version of Microsoft's flagship racing game was delayed due to major technical issues.
Yeah, those rumors were everywhere.
But tonight, Microsoft officially denied it. Matt Booty, the head of Xbox Game Studios, confirmed it is fully on track for Q2 2027. And according to leaked beta tests, it runs perfectly on the PS5 at 1440p resolution and a super smooth 60 frames per second.
Although, it's probably worth noting that it is missing ray trace reflections and performance mode, but that is just due to the physical graphical limits of the PS5 hardware, not bad coding on Microsoft's part.
Sure. So, what does this all mean? Because as someone who grew up during the peak of the console wars, seeing a massive Xbox-exclusive franchise like Forza running natively on a PlayStation feels like seeing a glitch in the Matrix.
It really does.
It's like Netflix suddenly deciding to put Stranger Things on Hulu. It completely goes against decades of established strategy where exclusive games existed purely to force you to buy a specific plastic box.
Well, to understand why this shift is happening, you just have to look at the math and listen to Microsoft Gaming CEO Phil Spencer. He recently stated flat out,
"Yeah,
we're not in the console war anymore. We're in the content business."
Right.
So let's break down the raw numbers. Right now, there are roughly 65 million PlayStation 5s out there in the wild compared to about 30 million Xbox Series consoles.
Wow. They're being outsold 2-1.
Exactly. When Microsoft spent nearly $70 billion to acquire Activision Blizzard, they realized they simply could not recoup that massive investment by artificially limiting their game sales to the 30 million people who own an Xbox.
They need volume.
They need raw software sales. Releasing Forza Horizon 6, along with historical exclusives like Halo and Gears of War, onto the PlayStation isn't a white flag of defeat. It's a highly calculated corporate pivot from a hardware-first strategy to a software-first empire.
But creating the kind of massive multi-platform content that dominates the industry and generates that kind of revenue requires an immense amount of human labor. Which brings us to arguably the biggest leak in gaming history happening right now in a courtroom in Edinburgh.
The Leslie Benzies Employment Tribunal.
Yes. So Leslie Benzies, a former senior engineer at Rockstar North, which is the studio behind GTAV, is suing the company for wrongful dismissal. And in the process of this public trial, highly confidential development documents for Grand Theft Auto 6 haven't entered into public evidence.
And the details are just staggering.
The scale of this game is frankly terrifying. The map is 420 square kilometers. That is 3.5 times the size of GTAV. It spans Vice City, the Everglades, the Florida Keys, even parts of Cuba. There are 126 main story missions, a fully realistic tropical storm simulator, 5,000 uniquely programmed non-player characters with their own daily routines, dynamic stock, and real estate markets, and a 128-playing online mode.
The technical achievement is undeniable, but the crux of this tribunal is really focusing on how that achievement was actually realized by the workforce. Under oath, Benzies testified that to meet these colossal production goals, development teams were pressured into 80 to 90-hour work weeks for consecutive months.
Yeah, 90 hours.
Yeah, and internal emails from former Rockstar writer Dan Houser were presented to the court, explicitly telling the team to do whatever it takes to ensure a fall 2025 release.
Which really places this trial as the ultimate flashpoint for the debate over crunch culture in the tech industry.
It does, and it's important we look at both sides of the testimony here, impartially. On the management side, Rockstar executives argue for a concept they call Project Necessity. They argue that the sheer logistical complexity of aligning thousands of developers, voice actors, and engineers to ship a multi-billion dollar product on a fixed timeline occasionally demands extraordinary effort. They categorically deny Benzies' specific claims of abuse and are mounting a pretty vigorous legal defense based on industry standards.
And what's the other side saying?
On the flip side, labor organizations like Game Workers Unite and SAG-AFTRA are fiercely pushing back against that exact standard. They argue that systemic, mandatory 90-hour weeks are a clear violation of UK labor laws and represent a fundamental failure of project management, not a badge of honor. SAG-AFTRA is even exploring independent legal action based on the documents leaked in this trial.
It really makes you pause, you know. When you look at a digital map that is 3.5 times the size of its predecessor, populated by 5,000 simulated human lives with dynamic daily routines, you just have to ask the question, at what point does the ambition of the digital world completely override the physical well-being of the actual human beings building it?
This raises an important question, doesn't it? Because while some people are working 90-hour weeks to build and perfect these massive digital ecosystems, there is an entirely different group of people working just as hard to break into them.
Which brings us to the wild world of cybersecurity and blockchain. Let's talk about the Kronos network attack. The final damage report just dropped today.
Yeah, this is a big one.
Huge. Hackers managed to compromise the Kronos bridge, intercepting a staggering $111 million. Now, the good news is $102 million of that was successfully recovered by forcing a network rollback. The bad news, $9.19 million, which equates to about 4,200 Ethereum officially escaped.
What is truly revealing about this attack is the timeline and what it says about the vulnerabilities of decentralized systems. The Kronos security team actually detected the anomalous malicious transactions just 25 minutes after the attack began.
Which is incredibly fast.
That is incredibly fast monitoring for a network of this scale, yes.
Right, but it took them another 33 minutes to actually halt the network. I mean, decentralization is supposed to be this utopian future of shared power, but in a crisis, it's like a committee trying to hit the brakes on a speeding car. Why did it take over half an hour to just press the stop button?
Well, because in a decentralized blockchain, there is no master switch. There is no central CEO who can just pull the plug. They rely on what are called validator nodes.
Okay, what are those?
They are independent computers that verify transactions. To halt the chain, they needed 17 of their 25 independent validator nodes to officially agree and reach a consensus to stop. While those nodes were communicating and voting on whether to stop the car, the hackers funneled that $9 million out of the network.
And they sent it straight into centralized exchanges like Binance and KuCoin and then into a Bitcoin mixer. For the listener who isn't deep into crypto, a mixer is basically a digital blender, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You throw your stolen crypto in with thousands of legitimate transactions, hit puree, and the authorities can't tell whose money is whose when it pours out.
That is the perfect analogy. And because of that blender, the FBI and Chainalysis are now having to comb through massive server logs just trying to find a footprint, which is incredibly difficult.
So what about the users who lost money?
Well, Kronos has set up a $25 million compensation fund for the victims. And they have announced a firm September 15th deadline for users to file their claims. But that missing $9 million is likely gone forever. However, it's crucial to contrast the Kronos attack with another event that happened just hours later.
Right.
A group of hackers known as the White Hat Dragons discovered a massive vulnerability in the Liquid network, specifically in a Federated Peg smart contract.
Okay, hold on. Federated Peg smart contract. Before we talk about the hack, break down what that actually is.
Simply put, it is a digital lockbox or bridge used to safely move Bitcoin between the main Bitcoin network and the secondary Liquid network. The smart contract acts as an automated escrow holding millions of dollars in transit.
Got it.
The White Hat Dragons found a flaw in the code of that lockbox that allowed literally anyone to open it.
And they easily could have drained it.
They could have walked away with 50 Bitcoin, which is about $2.7 million right now, but they didn't.
Wow.
Instead of exploiting the bug, they pulled the funds to secure them, immediately contacted Blockstream, the creators of Liquid, returned every single cent, and handed over a detailed diagnostic report on exactly how they breached the system.
Which feels like a completely different universe than the Kronos hackers. Why do that? Just for the good karma?
Well, karma, yes, but also for a massive payday through what is known as a bug bounty program. Tech companies like Blockstream, Apple, and Google offer these bounties to financially incentivize ethical hacking.
Ah, okay.
Blockstream paid the White Hat Dragons the maximum reward tier of $500,000 and officially brought them on as security researchers. It is a highly effective win-win ecosystem.
That makes a lot of sense.
The company gets a live stress test of their security architecture without losing millions to thieves. And the ethical hackers get a substantial legal payout while fighting the stigma that all hackers are malicious actors.
Okay, let's take a breath and wrap this up because we have covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
We started with...
It might just be the invisible... autonomous systems constantly operating in the background, making choices and analyzing data on our behalf without us ever knowing.
Unseen forces. It always comes back to the unseen mechanics under the hood. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the information around you. Keep looking past the magic trick to see how the illusion is actually pulled off. We will see you next time.